Welcome to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, the podcast where we uncover the secrets of CEOs, entrepreneurs, and visionaries who've used public speaking to skyrocket their businesses and their bottom line. Get ready for captivating stories, valuable insights, and practical wisdom from the trailblazers who've mastered the art of the stage. I'm your host, Kelly O'Hara, and I'm thrilled to bring you their experiences and expertise directly to you. Let's get started. Welcome back to the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight, where we don't do fluff, we don't do filler, and we definitely don't do boring. This is the show where real pros pull back the curtain on what it actually takes to build a business, a brand, and a life of serious impact using the power of public speaking. Whether you're keynoting international conferences or just trying not to bomb your next boardroom presentation, if you're using your voice to grow your business, this is your backstage pass. Today's guest, let's just say, if workplace communication had a Jedi Council, this guy would have a seat. Anthony Lawsonai is one of the world's leading voices on workplace communication. And no, that's not PR hype. That's real talk. He's coached thousands of leaders across the globe, delivered keynotes on nearly every continent, and somehow still finds time to write, count them, 14 books, hundreds of columns, and even drop a few songs on Spotify. He's not just about soft skills. He's about smart strategies, the kind that make people actually want to follow you, work with you, and stay engaged long after the meeting ends. Whether it's empathy-driven leadership, care-centered communication, or how to get people to actually remember what you said on stage, Anthony's cracked the code. He's been called one of Sweden's most popular speakers. He's shared stages with icons like Simon Sinek and Arianna Huffington. And if you're looking for the blueprint to go global with your speaking career, this guy's lived it, mapped it, and teaches it. So without further ado, I have to say, welcome, Antonio, to the spotlight. We are so glad to have you.
Thank you so much for having me. What an intro. I like to meet that guy.
You are all that and more, I'm telling you. I mean, I could have gone on. If people knew, you have been International Speaker of the Year in Sweden in 2022 and 2019, I couldn't even put it in the intro. 2019, you were third place at the Swedish Championship of Storytelling. You're voted one of the most popular speakers in Sweden in the last 5 years. Come on. And your TEDx talk has been an inspiration to like 300,000 people. And you're a board member of the National Speakers Association. That's the Bible in this industry. And you're part of the Global Speakers Federation. So to have you here, believe me, it is a gift. Everybody who wants to speak, this is the man to follow. But I want to go back. I must go back. We've got to talk about who were you before you became this kind of global icon in the speaking industry and a communication expert that's so highly respected. Who were you before you were a top voice in workplace communication? And what's the story behind the shift? You were a telecom executive, and then you became an international speaker coach. Okay, I need to hear that story.
All right, so let's start with a telecom story. There's so many pivotal moments in your life, but one of them is me being employed, like having a normal job like you and I both had before. Actually, we've had some similar things. I've been working in sales and marketing as well, just like you, and event management and so on. So I was working at this global telecom company, Ericsson, and I would have to go back all the way to 1999, December 1999. And it's in Stockholm and it's cold, it's snowy. Yeah, that type of weather. And one of my colleagues more or less grabbed me by the arm and say, "Hey, you and I, we're going to go to an audition." "For what?" I said. "Oh, we're going to go out on this global roadshow talking about something we call mobile internet." Now, Kelly, this was 1999, so there were no smartphones around, and nothing like that. It was just a vision about something. And I said, "Yeah, I'm down. Let's do it." So we went to this conference room. James and Mike were two trainers and doing some sort of assessment of us. So they threw everything at us. But before they even started, they said, you know what, we already had presenters. We filled the quota for that one. But what we need right now is program leaders, because this is going to be like a TV show. So we need you to act as a TV show host. It's going to be interviews, things flying in from the side. It's going to be all sorts of things, live interviews on screens and everything. And I said, yeah, it was fine. I'm here. Let's do it anyway. And I don't know how I cleared my schedule. It was like a 2-day thing. They just threw everything at us to try and see if we could handle it. And afterwards, both me and my colleague and three more people perhaps were selected to act as program leaders. And next thing I knew, I was on a plane to Singapore, and then to New Zealand, and then to China, and then to Mexico and the US, acting as a TV show host. It was just so much fun. And I said to myself, I can do this all day long. This is just fun. But I was also considered a high potential in the company, and I had never really thought about starting my own company or anything like that at that point. But I would say that was like the seed that was planted, and then it grew. And then a couple of years later, I just couldn't resist it anymore. So I quit my corporate career. And this was 2006. Actually, 2004 validate. I already started, but 2006 I quit. And for 19 years now, I've been doing this instead.
You really validate. There's a famous American, Will Rogers, that said, and my father used to quote this all the time because he was a sports entrepreneur. And he said, you find what you love to do and you never work a day in your life.
It's a fantastic quote, isn't it?
Yeah. And you seem like you lived it. You found the thing, but you were young. How old were you when you started it?
I wasn't that young. I was 38. When we record this, I have 2 more weeks until I'm 57. So I'm not talking about age anymore. I'm talking about leveling up. So I'm leveling up. That's what I'm doing.
Wow, that's beautiful. Yeah. I love hearing that. Now, I usually share with a lot of time our guests will share something that was devastating that happened to them, or a perceived setback that changed the game for them. Was there anything in your life, was it always smooth running and flawless? And did you just fall into the next pile of rainbows, or did you have a challenge that is one?
I had plenty of challenges, I would say, for sure. I'm a second generation immigrant in Sweden. My parents came from different places in Europe to Sweden, and it hasn't been all that easy having my name. You pronounced it pretty good, Anthony Lassinai, but I've been called everything from lasagna to last night. So I hear every version of it, starting my keynotes many times talking about that. But it also means that I have an uphill battle in the beginning, especially in my domestic market, because every time you have a strange name, it evokes suspicion. So you actually have to start by getting people to feel good, recognize the name, finding ways to make them, you know, at ease before you can take your next step. Once they do that, I'm in a good place, because now I'm unique. Nobody in the whole world has the same name. Now, this is not a problem internationally, because if you travel to another country, whether it's Malaysia or the US, you can be called whatever, because they know that you're an international speaker. So then the name isn't an issue anymore. But if you talk about my upbringing, it has been somewhat of an issue. Not a big one, because I don't take it too personally, but still it's there. So it has been a fight, if you will, from that perspective, that I need to prove myself a little bit extra. And I've been doing that probably throughout my life, feeling like the underdog, if you will.
I think that's a powerful thing to share right now more than ever, at least here in America, because we're going through that. We're going through a major shift with major immigration, people coming in. And I'm sure that there's a lot of that feeling. I mean, we're an immigrant country. So, you know, it shouldn't be such a big issue here in America, because everybody here is ultimately an immigrant. But right now it's a hot issue in my country. And so I think they can really appreciate what you're saying. And not all, but along with that, the advice that you're giving is how to approach that. If I want to be a speaker and I have a different name, or I have a different religion, or I have a different perspective, I still have to get in the game to be able to be represented. And I think you gave some really great advice. You know, it's great to be unique after you've made people comfortable.
Yeah, you first have to connect somehow. So if you can do that, if you can find a way to connect, to find common ground, understanding people and so on. I talk about my three communication superpowers all the time. And one of them, the biggest one, I would say the first one is empathy. Being interested instead of interesting. Focusing on listening and focusing on being present and listen, not to only to respond, but to understand. There's so many things you can do with that. And if you do that well, especially on the stage as well, not only before when you prepare, but also on the stage, finding a way to make this feel like a conversation, finding a way to say, I get you. There are things that we have in common. All of a sudden, they can lean in, they can listen, and we can have a good conversation.
Oh, I just love that. I want to tell you, you sparked me right there because my mother, I share this with the audience before, but my mother, as a child, I remember her very specifically, one of the biggest pieces of advice she gave me. And it felt as an edict back then, but it turns out it's the most important thing I ever learned. She said, your job in life is to be interested and interesting. And I love it that you just mentioned that. I want to share with everybody, you need to see Anthony's TEDx talk called Six Communication Truths That Everyone Should Know. It is fabulous. And I really advise that you check it out. I know that you study success factors, everything from what you say, how you listen or don't, how you cooperate, how you sell and lead. You cover such a beautiful gamut. But talk to us about this, the need for and the importance of communication and how energy plays into that.
All right. So from one sense, communication in itself is really not important. It's the effect of communication that is the game changer here. So communication for me is the vehicle, the tool to get us somewhere. If I look at this from some sort of human perspective, there's two things in a team or an organization. It's motivation and it's communication. Motivation is the engine that makes people want to move somewhere because that's what the word means. It means move in Latin. Communicate is when you move together. That's when you have the collaboration, the cooperation, the leadership, the culture, everything like that. So you need it in order to move. And again, when I talked about the three communication superpowers, which I preach all the time, the aggregated result of all the insights I share, I've found during the decades I look into this. It's empathy, as I mentioned, understanding another person, being interested, not only interesting. It's clarity, so that people understand what you say and can remember it as well, because we cannot act on what we don't remember. And I've done so many mistakes on that. I thought that I was very clear and then nothing happens. And then I realized that they don't get it. So did I do a good job or not? Probably not in that case. And then energy is mostly about nonverbal communication, how you look and how you sound when you communicate. Are you believable or not? Or can I believe that you believe? Because if I don't see that, how should I believe in you? And those three together in a perfect harmony will create fantastic teams, fantastic collaboration, and ultimately great results. I know that you're really interested in results as well, right, Kelly? I've seen it on your bio and so on. It's turning things into results, turning collaboration into results. That's what you talk about as well, isn't it?
Love the creative process. I love the, yes, I'm an entrepreneur at heart from, and I left corporate, but I got to have a lot of entrepreneurial exploration while I was in it, with other projects that I got to do in tandem. But the truth is, I loved creating it. And yeah, the results were really secondary in so many ways because it was the excitement of building it. And I love collaboration. I love bringing people into it. It's so much more interesting than doing it by yourself. When you see what you could create together, everybody puts their ideas together and then it comes together in this grand vision that you might be sparking. But yes, you're absolutely right. It is a turn on for me. But I look at you and here it is. You've stumbled into this, oh my gosh, I'm going to be a game show host. I'm going to host these things. And you turned it into a business. And it looks like it turned what was, there was a turning point where purpose became your priority here on this. And then it goes into communication across industries and continents and cultures. I'd like to know from you, what is the breadth of that taught you about what people really need to thrive in their work or at work?
There is something to be said also about the whole global village that we're in, where some people are experts in cross culture. cross-cultural communication, the differences, the polarities between different cultures and so on. And I actually focus much more on similarities. What do we have in common? Having traveled the globe so many times, I see that everyone still wants to be appreciated, respected, valued, and so on. And that's the same in any culture. Then it might take different expressions and so on.
I just want to mention that.
I believe it's important to say, because I can be in the Middle East, or I can be in Asia, or I can be in the US. It's the same thing. Then we have different leadership styles and so on. But I always focus on the empathetic leadership style and more about how we care. Care is a really important word. Right now, when we record, this is my time. I'm writing a new book together with a good friend from Switzerland, Daniela, and it's only about care, how to lead with care. So that's going to be the topic. And talking about topics, I forgot your question. I was so much into the whole global similarities right now that I forgot what you really asked me. Can you please do it again?
Of course. No, but however it comes out, I love a conversation, because you never know for sure where it's going to go. And that makes it an adventure each time. No, I love what you said. Basically, the question was, as you've been out there in the world at several different continents with different cultures, what have you discovered, or what is the breadth of that opportunity been for you that tells you, really, it informs you what people really need at work? And I think you covered it. And I do think you said, you know, people need to feel engaged. And like any relationship, anyone that you have, you want to be seen. You want to be understood. You want to be acknowledged for what you contribute. What more would you add to that?
Yeah, that would be it. And first of all, I just want to say, meta communication going on here in my own brain. I'm talking about being interested, and then I always even forget your question. I forgot the question you asked. So that's me stumbling again.
I love that. I'm not alone. It happens all the time.
I would say it like this. So you have... I wouldn't put communication in the center. I would put engagement in the center. Engagement is the key that unlocks performance. So let's say you have an organization that has strategies and plans and goals and so on, and they want people to move towards that direction. So basically, they want them to perform. If you want people to perform, then you need people to be engaged. You could potentially threaten them, and they will do it because they have to. But we're talking about doing it because you want to. So you want to have the engagement. Engagement unlocks performance, but communication unlocks engagement. So the flow is the way you meet, greet, and treat people. Communication will influence the way they are engaged and motivated, which will influence performance and ultimately results. That's the flow. So when I talk, I mainly talk to larger organizations. So I talk to leaders and teams in somewhat larger businesses and so on. And they have so many plans and goals and strategies, and they don't know how to reach them. And they say, what can we do? Can we create some enthusiasm here? And can we communicate in a better way? And help us, Anthony. And sometimes I can, especially if they want to elevate their own performances and so on. If they don't, then nothing helps. Then firework and sparkle for a while, and then that's it. So it depends on the level of depth they want to go into. Is it a 45-minute keynote that will create some party feeling and balloons and fireworks? Or do they want to have a masterclass of something? Or do they want to have a training program or individual coaching? It's almost like, since I spend at least half of my time doing keynotes myself, I don't do so much moderation anymore. I'm not the host anymore, so often the program leader. I do mostly keynotes. That's like having a light sunburn. That's getting out in the sun for 5 minutes, and it feels just good. But the more you go into in-depth, the deep tan, then the more you go into the individual person's drive and motivation and competence and so on. So time matters. The more time you can spend, the more results you can get out of it. I'm not taking away the effect of a great keynote, but it's often short-lived compared to having more time with people.
It feels really clear to me that no matter that you're working globally and that you're working with different industries and large companies, that it's really important to you that it stay personal, that this is personal for you. It's not just business. I think you like this connection, and that I think that's part of why you're so effective at what you do, because you can feel it off of you. That's that energy you put out.
Kelly, for me, it's I consider myself a Sherpa, helping good people in good organizations to reach whatever mountain they want to climb.
Oh,
that's my vision. So there are businesses I don't want to go into or work with so much because it's not part of my value system. But most companies and most people, I believe, are good. So if I can help them so that they can help their patients or clients or the planet or whatever, I want to be part of that. I want to help. I want to have their back. I want to be part of that journey with them. So I don't mind at all being the one melting snow to water so that they can be refreshed and take that extra step and one more step up to that mountain. So yeah, I see myself as a Sherpa. I have a higher cause that I want to serve.
That is a unique position I have not heard before in that particular way. And I love that, a Sherpa. I love that analogy. So is this why, this is part of why you created the Communication Insights Blueprint? I want you to talk to me about that system. Tell me what's at the core of it and why does it work?
The core of it is that I want to help people create sustainable growth. And sustainable is an important word. There's no business on a dead planet, for instance. We have a loneliness epidemic going on in the world right now. There was a woman in Arizona this fall, 60-year-old woman in Arizona, came to the office and died, and it took 4 days before anyone noticed it. That is heartbreaking.
That is.
That's also about sustainability. It's a social sustainability. Are we treating people well enough? Are we seeing people well enough? So there's all sorts of things going on here in the world right now. And I'm just mentioning one example in Arizona, but you have so many other places. South Korea, right, is spending a couple of $100 million just to make people feel less lonely. So it happens all over the world. Gallup, I think, said that 20% of all the workforce feel lonely, not alone, but lonely. So again, it's heartbreaking. And I want to see if I can help with some sort of solution to that one. But the blueprint is about creating sustainable growth, moving towards strategy so it becomes reality through high impact communication.
No, I can't
nutshell.
Let this go. I cannot let this go for a second. The loneliness factor, it is an amazing thing that we have more communication capability now than we have ever had. You can talk to someone across the globe in 2 seconds. You can bridge the gap and create relationship with people for barely anything. Zoom is manageable. If you can't afford Zoom, something's really wrong because this opens up the world for you, for your business, for you personally, for you to not just talk to them on the phone. I'm not a big fan of the phone, so I don't like talking on the phone. I love this dimension of being able to see someone. And I feel the intimacy on Zoom. I don't feel the same on the phone, but I feel it with Zoom. But you're so right. People are lonely now when they can talk to as many people or as few people as they want to with the dial of a number and or getting on Zoom. And yet they feel lonely and left out. And you can see more now. Television, you can go around the world. You can see things you'll never get a chance to go and see. And you can be part of a group that whether you get to go or not, you can still have somewhat of a visual experience of it. And yet people are feeling so lonely. I'm glad that you're working on this, Anthony, and I'm here to help you.
Yeah, the need for belonging is one of the strongest driving forces in humanity. I read a book about tribal psychology where the author said it's to the point where it's more important or to belong than to be right. So that's why you have groups like flat earthers, because they have a tribe. They talk to other people, they feel valued in that community, and they can believe that the world is flat and all that, and they belong. It's really hard if somebody says, you know what, I don't that the earth is flat anymore. I believe it's a globe. Then they are expelled from the community. And that's one of the toughest things you can be. It's almost physically hurtful to you. So that's why people just stay in cults or sects or whatever. It's one of those things that happens. But you know what? It's so easy to work on that from an organization perspective. Do you say hi in the morning or do you look down in your phone? Do you treat your new colleague, invite them for lunch with you, or is it just the old crew? simple things? Do you ask for opinions in a meeting for to everyone, or is it just the loudest voice that gets all the attention? There's so many things you can do that's really simple and super practical that will make people feel less lonely and more valued. And yes, we have all the technology and we have the social media and so on, but Kelly, one physical hug is worth more than 1,000 likes, to be honest.
1,000%. I agree with you. And one of the things that shocked me during COVID, when we were allowed to go out again, I live very close to a lake and I can get to it in about 7 minutes. And walking that lake all the way around, I was surprised after people had been locked up in their homes for so long, they would go down and walk that lake, but they'd have their cell phones. They'd be paying attention to their cell phones while they finally are out looking at this incredible natural beauty, and people were out together finally. No one was talking to each other, and I found that stunningly upsetting. What are you doing? It's like going out to dinner and to go to an expensive place. You're supposed to be there dining. Dining involves engagement, and you would see a couple sitting at a table on their phones, and their kids would be there. Everybody's on their phones. And my God, this isn't dining. You might as well have gone for takeout. You have forgotten the fine art of connecting communication.
And you saw my TED Talks, TEDx Talks, so you know that I don't mind technology at all. I love the fact that you and I have this conversation on two different continents right now. It's just amazing.
Amazing.
But we do have a risk if we stop meeting people in the flesh, in 3D. We need that too, for sure.
I think you have a wonderful passion and goal.
Sorry, one more time.
I said, I think you have a wonderful passion and goal, and that you're trying to make a difference in the world in the way that you are. Because really, in the end, being people together, bringing people together. And I'd love to know from you, what's one thing that leaders consistently get wrong when it comes to workplace communication? What does it actually cost them?
The stress level is many times too high. And if you're too much in stress, in distress, not euphoric stress, but distress, the negative way of stressing out, you stop listening. You cannot get access to your higher functions of the brain. It's if you have a traffic light in the brain and you're always stressed, then it's like a red light. So finally, you just want to get away from whatever situation you're in, because that's how you survive, so to say. And if you don't stop that stress level, if you cannot take it down and start listening again, you will lose empathy. You will lose the thing that might actually put you into a leadership position. So I would say that stress is really a big danger, I would say, when it comes to leadership. Because again, you don't listen. You start answering questions before the question is even asked properly. You probably have that feeling sometimes. I've had this as well. I'm trying to ask a question. Somebody's too stressed to really listen, so they just answer with something and it's wrong, the wrong thing. And you feel that they don't care. And they don't care because they don't have the energy to care. It's not enough. I mean, they just are wasting all the energy on whatever things that bothers them in that sense. So I would say that is the biggest thing. After I have my speeches, my keynotes and so on, I would say that's the number one thing that people come up to me afterwards and say, I need to just stop. Just stand still for a while, put the phone away and listen again and be present
that's
to my people.
Fine art. That is the fine art of listening and being present. I think if I were to choose two things that I think set apart anyone who is a phenomenal leader, there is their ability to listen. And I think anyone who's got a powerful relationship that's successful over time, I think listening is such an incredible gift to the other person, but it also takes some of the stress off you. You're not always having to perform. You're receiving. You know, it's a balance of receiving and giving at the same time. That works for companies. That works for marriages. That works for friendships.
And yet it's so easy to forget it. Another thing about that is that empathy, then, if we talk about that specifically, is also the most fragile of the three superpowers I mentioned, because as soon as you feel entitled to the corner office or the best parking space or the fruit basket or whatever, you lose empathy and people will notice immediately and they will like you less, which means that the loyalty is out the window as well. So there's also one of those things that can happen. And I've seen plenty of where this has gone wrong. And it's not appreciated by anyone. Also, there's that as well. But it's also about misunderstandings. Why aren't they as passionate as me? Why do they misunderstand me all the time? I said that. No, you didn't. Well, I meant it. But that's not enough. And even if you said it, it doesn't mean that they heard it or listened or understood it and so on. So there's so many steps. So believing that communication is an easy thing is also almost humoristic. So one of my missions is to make communication easy.
So, I love that.
You don't complicate everything all the time.
So that's why you have such a focus on care-centric communication and compassionate leadership. That's where this comes from for you.
It does. There's a book out. I think it's called The Subtle or The Noble Art of Not Giving a Fuck. Sorry to curse you on, but it's the title of the book. I read the book and it's not really about that, but the title provokes me quite a lot. So I was thinking I need to write a new book that is only about caring, only about giving a, you know, because we need more of that in the world. So that's why we're writing this book right now about how to lead with care, the care concept, so to say. It is important because if you do care, it's much easier for you then to craft your message so that it get across to the other side. So you reach not only out, but you reach in. But you have to start caring first. So if I first care about you, try to understand you and your dreams and hopes and fears and aspirations or whatever, I can craft a message that fits you. And then I can deliver it with the right tonality and body language and energy and so on. So there's so many things beneath those three words, empathy, clarity, and energy. But it's the aggregated result of it that I'm talking about here. So when I train people in this, or when I coach people in conversations, then I spend quite a lot of time on the empathy side. When I train people in presentations, then we have to lift up the energy and the clarity. If you have high on both, then you are a charismatic speaker, you are an engaging speaker. If you have low on both, you have no engagement. If you have high on both, you have high engagement. It's that simple. But you cannot have only one of them. You cannot have only clarity but no empathy. Then you become a dominant, insensitive psychopath. And if you have only energy but no clarity, then you become a clown. Only empathy means that you're a therapist, but nothing will ever happen. So you need the combination of the three. Also, as a speaker, I train people to be better speakers. It's not only about the leader in the company. It's also about anyone who wants to craft the art of speaking.
Ooh, this is so good. A lot of people might think that this care and compassion is really, it might sound soft to some people, but those traits actually drive performance.
Yes, soft skills for hard results.
Ooh.
That's the thing.
It's the usual pain point that you find that you have to deal with. And what's the transformation to help unlock that? What do you do? What's your strategy?
First, I want to connect. I want to make them trust me. Trust is the currency in this case. It's the password. That's my. I have was speaking only about online behavior for young people. And he says, trust is the password. Anytime a parent asks him, I don't know about the password. You know the password, it's trust. It's the same here. We have to start with trust. If they don't trust me, they won't open up. They won't be vulnerable. They will have the guard up. Nothing will work. So we need to start with trust. If we have that, then we can start working on them if they want to.
That's not an easy thing to create, trust. Trust is not immediate. It shouldn't be immediate because it needs to have value. And sometimes that takes a little bit of time or there's unlocking that. Yes. I mean, but to break it, you can break it in a second.
Yes.
That's an interesting thing. It takes a while to build it. And it's like reputation. It takes a while to build it. You can lose it so quickly. And yet, how do you get people to value the quality of trust? Because that's about loyalty. That's about commitment. All the things that mean something in life, they seem to be a little bit up for grabs at the moment on which way people are going to go. I've certainly witnessed a lot of disappointing behavior in the last year that is really, there are so many reactions to it. And I think I've experienced all of them, some of them not too attractive. I'm just appalled by behavior. And yet you're in the game. You can't quit. There are days you just want to say, I'm writing off, you know, all of this. And yet that's not an option. We're here for a reason. We're supposed to be doing positive things. And you're getting to see it from all different points of view as someone that speaks to so many different audiences around the world. And yet still you're smiling, still you're joyous. I watch your talks. I've seen you in action. You just make people feel good the minute you hit the stage.
You know, having a smile, I talked to a travel guide once and she said, you can say anything as long as you smile when you say it. So perhaps that's the thing then. Okay, there's two levels of this when it comes to trust. One level is actually immediate. The first time we see each other, it takes me and you less than a second, 0.35 seconds to detect the facial expression and decide unconsciously whether or not the other person is okay or not. Not trust necessarily, but it's about, are you a threat or not? That takes less than a second. It goes super quick and then you will justify whatever you decided. So there is a power, it's called a primacy effect in psychological language, but we normal people, we call it the first impression.
And isn't it, men and women are different. Isn't it 16 seconds for one to make that decision and 29 seconds, something like that, for the other side to decide? Doesn't it take men a little bit longer and women are a little faster at assessing whether this person's okay?
No, not to my knowledge and my research. It's immediate. And what I mean with that is that I need to look at you first and get a feeling for whether or not I'm comfortable approaching you. Do you look angry? Meaning, are you a threat to me or not? And if I feel that you're not a threat, like the traffic light in the brain again, if I feel that this is a yellow or at least a yellow, but hopefully a green light, then I will be much inclined to connect with you. So then it will take a long time to, it takes a split second to make a first impression. Then it takes longer to make a second impression. But of course, you could screw up already after 29 seconds as well. I can meet somebody, let's say I meet a clerk or a seller or something, and they're unthreatable. I'll go to them and then they start to be annoyingly bad at their customer service. Then, of course, I would just immediately say, okay, fine, I was wrong. But normally it takes time to change a first impression. You need to spend time with a person and say, you know what, she was much nicer than I thought, or he was much nicer than I thought, or the opposite way as well. That was all smoke and mirrors. Now I know the real person and I don't like that person. But that you need time to do that. So the 29 seconds is, I need to get that in for you. If you can help me with that link, I would be happy to read it because I want to learn all the time. I believe that we're here to learn as long as possible. Anyone who thinks they have everything figured out, I'm sorry, you don't.
So far away from that. Anybody that is that assumptive and is naive and probably dangerous because they're really not paying attention. You wrote a book on body language called Understanding Body Language, Everything About You Communicates. And I love this because that's an area that fascinates me too. I'm a big fan of the behavioral panel that has four of these guys international. They deal with a lot of hostages. And, you know, they do a lot of hostage negotiation and interrogation. And so they're fascinating when I listen to them assess. And I love it that you wrote a book on this because it's so powerful.
Yeah, and I also say in the very beginning of the book, I say everything in this is wrong, but actually it's false, but it's likely. It's not true, but it's likely. So it depends. There's so many parameters that needs to be completely right. Just because I fold my arms doesn't mean that I'm not interested in you anymore. This could be my thinking. I need to have something called a baseline first. I need to find out, is this your normal behavior or are you doing something different now? So it's really hard to know exactly if somebody, for instance, is lying or not. But then you have some, and I love this, I say it with all my love, nerds who focus on something within, for instance, the voice, only the voice, or only gestures, or only something else. And it's just fascinating how they can dig into a topic so much, while I start on that higher holistic level, and then I can deep dive into certain areas. Like one friend who is only focusing on the voice, for instance, he says to me, Anthony, people say that the eyes are the mirror to the soul. They are wrong. it's the voice. And then he talks about the voice for 2 hours because it's his thing. It's his passion. And I just love to absorb what he's saying because it's so fun to listen to people who are nerds from that perspective, that they know everything about a certain slice of a topic. It's so cool. I'm
it's
just happy when I can meet those people.
My husband and I just started re-watching a show that came out a long time ago. It's on Hulu right now. It's called Lie to Me.
And yeah, I've seen it. Yeah,
have you seen
very
it?
Good.
That's a fascinating show. He touched my life in a way that I was in gaming for a long time.
I think it's based on Paul Ekman's studies, right? Research on facial expressions.
And he's a real guy. But he would deal with going into dealing with crime and political issues and everything else. But I was in gaming, and he and a lot of top poker players hired him in order to teach them how to look for tells and to see people who are cheating. I thought he was fascinating. So I'm enjoying that show right now. And boy, do they dissect body language in such an interesting way. It's not boring, I'll tell you that. So on that front, so here you are. You've accumulated all this information. You are doing wonderful things. But at the same time, when you're off time, you've written 14 books, co-written 14 books. What drives you to put your ideas into print on such a consistent basis?
First of all, I've written and co-written 14 books, so it sounds better than it really is. Many of them are written together with other friends, and the one I'm writing right now is again with another friend. And at least three of the books, I'm writing a chapter in a book with more than one author. So we have to tone it down a bit here. It's not that hard, really, when you look at it from that perspective. And also, my books are not 600 pages or 800 pages. It's practical. Most of the books are very practical, hands-on books of about 100 pages or so. So that's it's an easy read. It's not necessarily an easy writing, but it's an easy read. So yeah, then I do have time. And it's good to put your learnings and thoughts and so on into writing. It really is. It helps me. I write columns, articles, and things like that as well. So let's say I talk about loneliness, for instance. We talked about that before in our podcast here. Now, of course, I'm going to write about that. I'm going to write a column. I'm going to be on, talk about this on TV. I need to put my thoughts into some sort of structure and perhaps a framework or a concept or a blueprint or a model. And it will help me. And then it will help me explaining it to others in a clear and concise and easy way. So it's a way to gather my own thoughts, I guess, as well.
What a humble global leader you are. Very humble indeed. But I know that publishing a book takes time. It's not a fast process. It's relatively faster today than it used to be. But it still takes the time. There's still a strategy to it and a process to it. And I think you've found a way to get your voice out there, which I think is really powerful. Let's talk about this. Public speaking, since this show has been created to help entrepreneurs and authors and coaches and leaders really get out there and speak about what they do, you're central to this. This is so important. And one of the questions I'm just dying to ask you, since public speaking, you're part of the NSA, the National Speakers Association. Your pedigree is impeccable. I checked it out. I think it's amazing. But let's go into some of the skills that will really help my audience see speaking in a unique and powerful way. Let's talk about the science behind charisma. How do you create it? How do you get that if you don't feel that you naturally have it? Is it possible?
Yes, charisma is a trainable skill. Charisma is that invisible magnet that make people be drawn to you, if you will. And it has a lot of components. I think I found 12 of them when I looked at it. Most of the things I talk about will actually make you more charismatic if you train, if you put some willpower and effort into elevating your own game and your own skills, so to say. So it has to do with many things. One of them is empathy. I mentioned it before. Actually, a person with more empathy is also considered more charismatic. It's about dressing your messages in stories. Storytelling is borderline magic if you want to reach into people's hearts, not only to their heads. A charismatic person has about 50% more metaphors and analogies than the average person. So using metaphors is really powerful because it takes the abstract to the concrete. the unknown to the known. Like I come from the telecom industry, even though it's 19 years ago now, so it's a long time. It's almost too long. But right now, 5G is what we're talking about in the telecom world. I still have clients in the telecom world, so that's why I'm still somewhat in it. I think it's probably a handful of people, persons in the world that can in detail explain what 5G means. But for the rest of us, it's enough to say it's like a super fast highway. And then people get it. You don't need more than that. You need that analogy and that's it. You know the song from the Archies, Sugar?
Yeah.
They sing sugar, da, 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 honey, honey.
Honey.
They don't sing about glucoses and bee vomit. They sing about the girl that they want to meet. It's a metaphor. It's two metaphors in this case then. So metaphors are very, very important when you want to be charismatic.
Oh, I love that. Keep going. Tell us more. Tell us more
meaningful about gestures. Using your arms to something meaningful, helping them see and strengthen your message with clear, meaningful gestures is another one.
Give an example.
And we see many mistakes here as well, where people don't use their hands in a way that helps people understand the message better. So it's just like one gesture all the time. It could be one gesture, or it could be the wrong gesture. It could be no gesture. And sometimes that's okay, because you might be very strong in something else instead. Like, for instance, if you are telling a very captivating story, you might not want to be too expressive in your body language. On the other hand, sometimes you do want to be that. Sometimes you want to create a dialogue where you are both people. And then you have to be in the story yourself. And that creates energy. And heightened sense of energy will also make you more charismatic. So there's that as well. And it's a lot of, you can absolutely train it. But most of the things we talk about here when it comes to communication is about that. To add one more thing, to have a brave standpoint can also be one of those things that can make you more charismatic.
Explain the brave standpoint. For
well, like you take a stand on something. Then people say, it's not like only mainstream. For instance, I can say, it's really good to be scared of conflicts. And then people say, are you crazy? Conflicts are so developing and excellent and great. We grow when we have conflicts. No, we don't, I say. Conflicts, if you look at the word, it means a battle. It means what Vladimir Putin is doing to Volodymyr Zelensky right now. That's a conflict. I win, you lose. Disagreements, on the other hand, could be very developing if we treat each other with respect. And all of a sudden, I take a stand. I shake things up a bit. And people will be looking at me and say, okay, wow, okay, yeah, okay. Some will be provoked, but some will feel, okay, yes, got a point. And all of a sudden, I come across as very self-confident. And if I'm self-confident, I'm often more charismatic. Again, you cannot only be self-confident and do bullshitting all the time. You still have to have some substance in what you're doing. Again, explaining things in an easy way is better than to complicate things all the time with three-letter abbreviation or abstract language just because you want to feel or look smart. But if you make other people feel dumb, you haven't helped anyone and they will not feel that you're more charismatic.
How do you feel sense of humor plays into charisma? Do you think it's important?
Humor is a double-edged sword. So I would say if you can be so vulnerable that you can share some of the flaws of yourself, it helps. And you can do that with humor as well. Absolutely.
I believe that.
In a positive environment. I believe in, if I go back to my traffic light metaphor, I want to embrace everyone with a green light feeling, and then we can talk about red light problems. But we have to feel that we're in this positive bubble together where we are one. It's not you versus me, it's us together. And if I can get that feeling and we can smile and we can have fun and we can laugh, then it's easier. A laugh will also lower the guard and make people more open. Because if they have a positive mindset, they will open up, they will search for patterns instead of problems. While if they have a closed mindset, they won't. And laughter and humor helps us to just feel more open towards whoever we talk to. So it does help. I'm not a stand-up comedy guy, but I do have a positive energy in the room when I meet people. Also, actually online, but I have such a deep respect for the stand-up comedy community. They are so hardworking, putting so much work into each and every comma sign. It's amazing how they work. The work ethic is just crazy. It's so good.
Oh, I'm so glad to hear you say that. I agree with that. When I was young, before I was legal to go into, let's say, a nightclub, I remember being 19 and 20, and I would go to Comedy Store West. This was no alcohol was served, but I just happened, all the top comedians would come there to practice before they would go on The Tonight Show or any of the other big programs, or they'd go on the road. I can remember Robin Williams before he got a show called Mork and Mindy, which was very popular here. And he would come out and work it every night. And I would go like four nights a week. I would go after school and watch. Just incredible time, getting the timing down, seeing when you were in connection with the audience, how to bring them in. It was really quite a schooling experience to watch how they worked that room and practice. So it's so good to hear you say these were hardworking people that don't make very much money most of the time.
No, and they bomb as well, because we all do, but they do it. And then they pick up the pieces, find out what it was. Perhaps it was the right sentence, but you didn't have the pause in the right place or something like that. So yeah, they do so much work, more than most of the keynote speaking community that I know, including myself. I do sometimes put in that extra work. For instance, the TEDx and some other speeches where I have written down, I've scripted everything, like to the last word. And I put some words in bold because that's when I'm going to have my emphasis. And I'm working the script over and over again. And I'm recording myself and I'm really putting the effort into it. So if anyone actually watches this speech, I can give you the script. You will see that it's 95% the same thing that I've written down, that I've then practiced. And then you see it on YouTube then. Yeah.
So I think my question will be, first of all, tell the audience, have you ever tanked a talk where you walked out and didn't connect with the audience, or it was just, wow, I blew that? Has it happened to you?
Yes, it has.
We need to know. How
okay,
do you recover
so
from that?
Let me give you one of the stories. This was during the pandemic. I was, by the way, so fortunate because I wrote a book about virtual meetings like in 2016. It was not a bestseller, but boy, did it help me once the pandemic came, because everyone wanted to know more. And I wrote a book about it. So obviously I knew something, and then I was in demand, so to say. And so much to so that I wasn't burnt out, but I was really tired. This was in the springtime of 2021, I think. And I was so tired, having done so much work for so many. And I had this pre-call with a new client for a speech. And she said they wanted to know more about how to engage people in virtual meetings. But then she said one thing. She said something about, we don't turn the camera on. We don't do that. That line was enough. I stopped listening. I listened on the wrong level. I listened only for some clues. And then I decided, I have the picture now. I don't need to listen to you anymore. In my world, I thought that they were new beginners. They were not very experienced in this. So I said to myself, I'm going to start at a very basic level. And afterwards, they said they were so disappointed that I started on that basic level because they were so much more advanced. So I think that I actually did a pretty good performance, but it was the wrong speech, or the right speech for the wrong audience. Well, it wasn't, I did not hit the mark. And it haunts me to this day. This is an example where I just said, okay, it was all on me. I should have asked more questions. I should have found out more. Tailored it better. I didn't. I thought I had it figured out. I did not. So this was me not practicing the skill of being interested. I can blame it on my fatigue, but it doesn't help the customer, which, by the way, didn't have to pay because it wasn't their fault. So
that's such a good point that I bring with my clients as well. And I'd like to ask you, what are the questions? What you brought about is a key issue, is the right talk for the right audience. What are the, now that you've been through that and gave the wrong talk for the right talk for the wrong audience, or vice versa, we'll call it that. What now questions from that experience would you ask the event planner to really understand their audience so that you could give a talk that was really applicable directly to them. Do you do that now?
Oh, yeah, I do. If it's an open event, I often talk to the event organizer. I need to find out who is in the audience. And that's the first thing, demographic, psychographics, understanding a bit of what kind of challenges they might have. If, let's say, oh, okay, it's an HR event, so it's HR executives and some specialists as well. All right, but what's going on in their world right now? What's happening? You know, they have this situation, and we're going to talk a lot about this and that. And so how can I help you with your theme of this event? What is it that I can bring to you? Well, this is what we want. We want you to talk about engagement or communication and so on. So sometimes I can also ask, okay, what would you like to happen afterwards? Like, for instance, if it's a company directly, I would say that, okay, I've done my speech. What would make you satisfied after I've done my speech? How do we know that I succeeded based on what you want? And then that question in itself will open up for them to talk about what they want. And then we can talk about where they are today, where they want to be, and the gap in between, and how I can help them to fill that gap. But I need to just be curious a little bit longer. I need to understand. And then I come back to them and I loop it back and say, do I understand you correctly? This is where you are. This is where you want to go. And this is how I can help you with one piece of the puzzle. And if they say, yeah, then we're in a pretty good place.
Exceptional advice spoken from someone who really understands how the speaking industry works. If you want to be a successful speaker, it's not about you. Who are you speaking to? What do you bring to the party? I love it that you shared that. That is fabulous. So hopefully someone won't have to tank with a potential client event planner because they will have found out what they need to know in order to tailor the talk that makes a difference for that particular group. I want to ask you about, you have 9 memory hacks so that your audience remembers you. Really helpful to this audience. Would you share some of those with us?
Yeah, and the third one, 3 is the magic number. So you remember 3 things anyway. So let's take 3. And we actually mentioned most of them anyway. We talked about storytelling, metaphors, and then the power of 3. How many bears did Goldilocks meet? How many piglets did the big bad wolf chase? How many temptations did Jesus Christ get? Or what else can we have? All the stories. How many wishes did the genie grant Aladdin? It's 3. It's always 3. So if you want people to remember things, put them in triads. It's a smart way. Don't say, I want to have 5 or 10 or even 9. 9 memory hacks is too much. So you should find ways to always cluster them into 3. That's how we remember. Faith, hope, and glory, I think it is. Avicii, sex and drugs and rock and roll. Blood and, Kelly, help me out here. Blood, sweat, and?
Tears.
Tears, exactly. Yeah, I didn't even have to say it. You knew it. Who said it? It was Winston Churchill. But he didn't say that. He had a fourth word. This rhetorical genius messed up. He had the fourth word, and that's the word toil. I don't know exactly how he said it. I think he said, all I can offer is tears, toil, sweat, and blood, or something like that. Toil. Who the hell remembers toil?
No,
we're
going to
go for concrete 3 body fluids, blood, sweat, tears. Forget about toil. So
brilliant. Anthony,
it's
that's
a good
brilliant.
Advice.
Even in decorating, you decorate in 3s. You put things in clusters of 3. Isn't that interesting how powerful 3 is?
Very powerful.
And maybe somebody out there knows that we can only hold that much in our minds. I know it's true for me.
It is like that. It's a cognitive overload once you go beyond 3. Like my I have 2 sons. My oldest son is turning 25 and he's like the math genius, studying for civil engineering and things like that. But when he was like 2 years old or something, I can't remember exactly, he started to count and he said 1, 2, 3, many. Mm-hmm. And that is so on the spot. He understood, even though he didn't know that he understood. But that's how it is. It's, yeah. The more you add, the less people will remember. And the less they remember, the less they can act on it.
Oh, that's absolutely perfect advice. I'm so glad that you're here. So tell me, bottom line is, what do you think separates an effective speaker from a truly influential one?
What a powerful question. What is your own opinion on that one?
You're going to turn this around on me, are you now?
Yeah, I am, because this is something I need to probably think about for too long for a podcast. It would be strange to me just being quiet for a while, but I want to hear your thoughts on this one.
I feel that being an effective speaker, an informational speaker, can have value. We're looking to get information to take away from us. Gosh, this is a really great question. Makes me think as well. But an influential one is one that you take the message with you. It's thought-provoking. It's something that makes you think about it. And by thinking about it alone, you're integrating it into your belief system. That's influential too. I mean, I'm speaking personally and professionally as well, is that really makes a difference. It's one thing if you were great and you performed well and you delivered the information and people bought what you said. But if I can make you think about it after we aren't together anymore, that's influential to me. In my mind, it makes a difference. I'll take you with me. I'm going to talk about it at the dinner table. When I go to write my next speech, I'm going to take into consideration what you've said. And it's now part of me. That's how I would.
So in this case, effective means knowing how to perform, more or less. But it's not necessarily powerful enough. The message is not powerful enough. It's a delivery. It's like the gift wrapping, but the content is not really there.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I can see that. I can see that. Yeah.
And it's effective if people hear you speak and they go, yeah, that makes sense. They're done with it at that point. It's fine. You've communicated. I understand it. That makes sense to me. We're fine. But if you made me think about it and I walked around it, and or I took it on and said, oh my gosh, that will change what I do, I would look at that as being influential and powerful.
And I believe that our job, when we are on a stage or in a conference room speaking, is to facilitate positive change. If we have no reason to facilitate a change, why open our mouths at all? Whether that change is spiritually or mentally or physically, whether it's to ease your mind or make you take a bold move, it could be different things. It has to be something. It's like there's three questions you could ask. What do you want the audience to know? Like the remembering part. We talked about that, the memory part. What do you want them to know? If I wake you up in the middle of the night, what do you remember? Is it what I want you to remember? What do you want them to feel? That's an emotional journey, you know, the pain and the gain and so on. But ultimately, what do you want them to do? And if you don't have an answer on that one, then why are you there? What is your purpose?
And until you know what your purpose is, what's the value here? Why are you doing it?
Yeah, then it would be like, I want to be famous. For what?
Fame is fleeting. That's just, I don't know. That's really a pursuit. I guess it's fair. That's not one that calls to me. I don't understand it.
No, but I get some people asking me, okay, I also want to be a speaker. What do I do? First of all, on what?
Yeah.
And once you figure that one out, what is it that you want to bring to the world? Then my next advice would be collect stories, examples of that. And then the next step is craft these into a compelling speech. And now you have something to build on. Now we can talk about body language and we can talk about dynamic voice and we can talk about all sorts of things. But if you don't have a message, it's hard for you to be a speaker. You have to have a message first, something that you're passionate about, something that you think can help humanity or whatever, something, or specific leaders or customer service reps, whatever the target audience is, you have to have a passion and a message.
So otherwise, true. You can learn to present the message in a way that will be compelling and successful, but you've got to have one first. What problem are you fixing? What solution are you bringing to the table? No matter what it is, So it's such perfect advice. So now after listening to this talk, I'm sure this is only one conversation we're having, because I already want to have you back on the show. This was absolutely delicious. But you're offering our listeners something wonderful, and I would love for you to share your 45-minute coaching session. This is very unique, everybody. This is not always available. So I felt really blessed that he has offered two things that are incredibly powerful for our audience. Tell us what it is, Anthony.
Yes. After I give a speech, I give people a QR code to a hidden link on my webpage. And in that hidden link, there are more links to downloadable materials where you have books, checklists, templates, all sorts of things. It's just for you. I guess you have to sign up with an email, but that's it. You have a booking link for me. Actually, I think it's 30 minutes, but I don't mind extending it to 45 at all. So I said to you, Kelly, that the first 10 people who ask me get a 45-minute strategic call with me, no charge, nothing. Just book me and we'll talk on whatever you need to talk about. So that would be, it's not a sales call either. If you want to hire me, if you think that what I bring to the table is valuable, please talk to me about that. I'm happy to do it. Even though I suck at selling from podcasts or stages as well, it's not my fault. I get bookings anyway. But this is for you. If you think that you can have some value of speaking to me, discussing, having me as a sounding board, I'll be happy to do it. So there you go. Hidden link and also 10 45-minute strategic sessions with me.
That's
not for one
so
person,
powerful.
Though. It's 10 persons.
So, 10 so people. It's,
10 people.
People,
yes,
get
exactly.
It. You should jump on this. This gentleman is one of the most acknowledged people in our industry, and his advice, his perspective will serve you. I say salute the first 10. Who's the ideal person that will raise their hand and take you up on this coaching offer? What do you hope they walk away with after a meeting with you?
Hopefully they feel that they want to be a better communicator so that they can get along better or get better results or influence more or having an impact on the world. So again, if you're a good person, I want to help you. That's what I want to do. Don't come to me and say that you want to bring more lung cancer to the world, because then I probably won't help you. So be one of the good guys, and then I'm happy to be your Sherpa.
I love that Sherpa. That's one I will not forget. I've never heard anyone describe their mission that way, and I think that's beautiful. I will never forget that. Tell me what you're most fired up about right now.
Right now, I am into this new book that I'm writing. So I have a two-day virtual workshop with my co-writer today and tomorrow, where we are looking into the material, writing new material and so on. And that's energizing. And the day after, I'm going to go to Stockholm, domestic work, meeting a international or global company within the steel industry. And I will meet about 100 leaders in that company, talking about the three superpowers of communication, because they want it. So that's going to be really interesting. So I'm fired up for this week. It's a good week.
Wow, steel. That's a very hot topic right out there in the world right now.
Boy, sure.
You're going to be in the heat of it for sure. That's exciting.
Yeah, when we record it, it's a really hot topic for sure. That's right.
Well, you're the right guy to be there. That's clear. And I'm excited for you. That's an adventure. That's not just a client or a talk. That's a global adventure.
It is, yeah, yeah. I'm also fired up because I'm going to go back to the U.S., I hope, soon, and do some coaching and training as well for a client there, which is really fun. So, yeah, things are happening.
I love that. Please come out to the West Coast. I would love to see you. This is fantastic. Any way we can support you, I'm very excited about it.
Thank you.
I really want to thank you, Anthony, for coming today and cracking your brain open for all of us, and your heart as well. You're an incredibly caring person. Seriously, it's the clarity, it's the frameworks, it's the way you pull psychology into leadership and caring that makes it feel like it's just a rare combo. And I'm glad we had this conversation. I hope this isn't your last time on the show, because it's not. I just want to tell you that it's not. I can't wait to have you back again.
I'll be happy to come back again. Thank you for having me. Really
just
nice.
joyous. You've given us so many wonderful things today that I think make a difference. And I love the power of three. I'm now going to be thinking about all of those. And they're such great metaphorical opportunities for people to use to really sync things. You left us with so many good pieces. I love that you give us a reminder that communication is not just about talking. It's really about creating clarity and connection and culture. That's powerful. And a leadership that's built on empathy and care. It's not soft. It's actually what moves people to perform and collaborate. And let's face it, stick around. Companies need that. So it inspires commitment. And I think we all need more of that. If everybody out there, if you want more Anthony, and I'm sure you should after listening to what he's had to say, check out his website at Anthony Lassani. Did I say that right again?
AnthonyLassani.com. If you can spell me, you will find me. I hope that there's a spelling going on as well so I can get it right.
That name of yours, you're right. It's got a little bit of, it's musical, but it's a challenge. You'll find his library of books there, or you can head straight to AnthonyLassani.com
/or LinkedIn,
book.
Of course. Yeah.
And I will have all of this in the show notes for you. And those first 10 people, you're crazy if you don't sign up for this one. This is really going to be valuable. And if you were nodding along to this conversation thinking, I need this kind of support in my speaking or my leadership journey or my company needs this, Anthony's offering these two seriously valuable gifts. You get a free 45-minute coaching session to the first 10 listeners. So if I were you, I'd go and grab it. And I will have the link when this show is, when it airs. So check it out. And his secret treasure chest of resources, books, templates, cheat sheets that he usually gives out after his keynotes, they are at his website /thank-you. Again, I'll have it for you. This is someone who walks the walk when it comes to speaking with impact. Anthony doesn't just believe in the power of public speaking. He lives it, teaches it, and uses it to drive real change in workplaces and cultures worldwide. And as always, I want to thank the audience for tuning in. We really hope this episode sparked something, an idea, a shift, a challenge. He is really a game changer, and this is why we do this show. If you got value out of this, I'd love it if you hit the like button. I'd love it if you'd share this episode with people that really want speaking to be part of what they do because they know it's needed. And please leave us a comment. I will respond to them. I love it. That kind of support really helps us grow the show and bring you bold voices like Anthony's with real world insight. Literally, real world insight. This isn't just a podcast. It's your crash course in turning your message into momentum. So with that said, thank you, Anthony, again. Thank you, audience who's listening. And I truly look forward to our next conversation. I'll see you all next time. Thank you for joining us for this episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight. We hope you enjoyed this deep dive once again into the remarkable stories and insights of our incredible guests. Their experiences and hard-earned, time-tested wisdom are not just meant to inspire you, but to provide you with actionable steps to take on your own path to success. Remember, you have a story to tell, and your voice has the power to transform your business and make lasting impact. And that's what it's all about. If you found value in today's episode, let us know. And I hope you'll take a moment and subscribe to The Spotlight wherever you listen to your podcasts so you never miss a thought-provoking or idea-producing conversation. I'm Kelly O'Hara, and I can't wait to see you back here for the next episode of the Six Figure Speaker Spotlight.